Global Village, where we explore the world through its music. I'm JJ O'Shea, and tonight we're going to dip a spoon into the bubbling cauldron of creative gumbo that is the North American state of Louisiana.
I love the weird sound and try to settle down. I'm gonna settle down. I'm gonna settle down. I'm gonna settle down. I'm gonna settle down.
They called him the poet of the blues, but his mother called him Percy, songwriter Percy Mayfield, there with a hymn to his homeland, simply titled Louisiana. It's the poorest state in the Union, and the most rich in its many diverse and varied music traditions.
This time I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm walking to New Orleans.
Let's begin by heading down to the coast to New Orleans, a city like no other in all North America, a city almost defined by its music, and the scene of so many musical beginnings. In fact, one of the most important places in the birth of Afro-American music is right there in the center of New Orleans. It's called Congo Square. It's near the French Quarter, and it's the place where black slaves were allowed to gather on Sunday afternoons in the early 1800s. And gather they did, in their hundreds, setting up market stalls and making music and performing dances. This was a unique event. You see, New Orleans was the only city in North America that allowed slaves to gather, let alone to make music. To begin with, the various tribes gathering in Congo Square, the Miners, the Congos, the Mandingos, stayed apart from each other, taking turns to perform their own particular dances and using homemade African instruments such as marimbas and woodblocks. But over time, the tribes began to mix and began synthesizing their different traditions, so that by about 1840, a new hybrid music had evolved. A lot of this new music was based on ring shouts. These were religious music rituals based on West African circle dances. We know this early music in Congo Square was raucous and wild from the written accounts of eyewitnesses, but we don't know exactly how it sounded. It predates any audio recording technology. But there are some field recordings made in South Louisiana in 1934 that might give us a clue. Just three recordings in total of a church group and congregation whose singing style is based on the old ring shouts. To me, these are the most vital, raw, and exciting recordings in the entire catalogue of black American music. It's a style of singing that predates blues and jazz and gospel, but it carries the original DNA of all those genres, and therefore, of everything else that grew out of them. The lead singer is Austin Coleman, and here he is exhorting the group and congregation to join him in proclaiming the good news. My soul is a witness. What I mean, with clear echoes of its African origins, and recorded in Jennings, Louisiana, 20 years before the official birth of rock and roll, Austin Coleman with My Soul is a Witness. Over the centuries, New Orleans had been a melting pot of people from different places. The French came in vast numbers, but the Spanish and the Irish and the English came too. It's a port city. There was a great influx of slaves from Haiti as well after the revolution there. And there were the Creoles, people of mixed race. There were pickpockets and pirates, sailors and pretty girls, strange-looking fortune tellers and voodoo operators, artists, poets and pimps. As someone said, it was a gathering place for lost souls. And by the turn of the 20th century, music was everywhere, especially out on the streets. For weddings, christenings, especially funerals, a marching band was essential. And if you were opening a new shop or a new business, well, you needed a band to parade the streets and advertise the fact. Even the Rag and Bone Men announced their arrival with a raw type of blues that made a big impression on the young Louis Armstrong. Jelly Roll Morton honed his skills playing in bordellos in the red light districts of New Orleans. And along with a host of other New Orleans players, people like Buddy Bolden and Louis Armstrong, he was developing a new kind of music that would later become known to the world as jazz. Jelly Roll Morton with the New Orleans Bump. We'll be returning to New Orleans, but next we're going to slide out of town and head west on Highway 10, out past Baton Rouge and deep into Cajun country. We should be getting there straight after this short break. Undisputed king of the Zydeco accordion, Clifton Chenier, with One Step at a Time. What is Zydeco? Well, you could say Zydeco and Cajun music are two sides of the one coin. First up, Cajun is the music of the French Louisiana whites. The French were culturally the dominant European group in Louisiana. They'd been forced out of Acadia in Canada, modern-day Nova Scotia, by the British in 1755, and they'd wandered south over the years, eventually following the Mississippi River on down to Louisiana, where they settled. The word Cajun is derived from Acadians, and it's the old French ballads, the two-step waltzes and lullabies that are at the root of the Cajun sound. Even today, most Cajun is sung in French rather than English. And Zydeco? Well, Zydeco is the black population's take on Cajun music. It's Cajun, but with a strong injection of blues and jazz. Of course, these things don't grow in straight lines, and Zydeco players have influenced Cajun players and vice versa. There's an incident, though, that illustrates the tensions that existed between the two communities. Amadé Ardoin was a legendary black accordionist. He first recorded in the 20s. This was when segregation in the South was enforced. but his skills were so great that, unusually, he was in demand in some white venues too, where the money was better. One night in 1941, he was playing at a white dance, and after singing a particularly energetic song, he accepted a white woman's loan of her handkerchief to wipe his face. After the dance, two white men followed him out and savagely beat him to death for this affront to their code of decency and good behaviour. I won't say all tensions have evaporated, but these days you can find musicians of all races playing in both Cajun and Zydeco bands, and the music's never been more popular. The accordion is still the instrument that defines the sound, and the current Cajun accordion king, in my book anyway, is Steve Riley. Steve Riley and his Mamou Playboys with Voyage d'Amour. As you might expect, country and bluegrass are big in Louisiana too, and the very wonderful Cox family grew up in the bluegrass tradition. They're from Cotton Valley in Webster Parish, up there in northwestern Louisiana. And we're going to hear them in just a jiff. Cox family with Little Birdie. Parts of that song derive from old Irish and English ballads, which of course are the foundation stone of country music. But we can't go to Louisiana without checking out one of the local juke joints. Let's head down south again, way down, past the oil refineries near Lake Charles and the cotton fields in Iberia Parish. There's a jumping little joint down there. If we swing off Highway 90 and then up this dirt track, see that old wooden shack in there amongst the cypress trees, where the light's coming from, where those guys in the pickup are pulling in. They're all working in the sugarcane farms, by the way. That's one of the main crops around here. And we're so close to the Gulf, you can taste the salt in the breeze. And it's warm. This is subtropical alligator country. So we're not about to go swimming. Let's head on in and see what they're playing on the jukebox. They call it swamp pop, a swirling soup of all the local Louisiana styles, and it is very much a local scene. You could hear it played on local radio stations and in juke joints all across southern Louisiana from the mid-50s right up until the present day. We just heard Tommy McLean's version of Before I Grow Too Old, a cover of a song recorded by Fats Domino, and that's a big part of the swamp pop scene, covers of country or blues or rock hits, but given a real local flavour. They like to cook them up with some local herbs and spices and a healthy dose of French je ne sais quoi. So the songs are reborn in a down-home swamp style. Here's Belton Richard reinventing the Merle Haggard tune, I'm a Lonesome Fugitive.
C'est ma dernière journée dans cette prison. Thank you.
Here he comes again, cutting a swathe through a great version of Chuck Berry's Promised Land. Johnny Allen with Promised Land, a version every bit as good as the original, but entirely different. And incredibly, that was the first take of the song featuring the completely unrehearsed accordion playing of Belton Richard, who just happened to be in the studio at the time. Well, everyone knows about the Sun Recording Studios in Memphis, the place where Elvis made his first recordings. It's even a big tourist attraction now. They call it the birthplace of rock and roll. But I think you could make just as strong a case, maybe even a stronger case, for the location of that particular delivery room in a much lesser known studio in New Orleans. And I'll produce the evidence straight after this. Incredibly, for a city famous for its music, there was no recording studio in New Orleans until 1945, when a young Italian-American kid called Cosimo Matassa saw the gaping niche in the market and converted the back of his record shop in Rampart Street into a small studio just around the corner from the old Congo Square. And it was in Cosimo's studio that Fats Domino and Little Richard made their first recordings, and a host of rhythm and blues hits were cut there that would later be covered by Elvis Presley. Good Rockin' Tonight, Tutti Frutti, and the track that we just heard, Lordy Miss Claudy by Lloyd Price, which included a dream backing band featuring Fats Domino on piano and Earl Palmer on drums. And Earl Palmer is one of the great unsung heroes of rock and roll. The session players, the backroom boys whose names don't appear on the record labels of the hits, but who were crucial in developing the sound that was the most explosive music style of the 20th century.
I'm walking, hear the need, I'm talking. By you and me, I'm hoping that you come back to me.
It was Earl Palmer's backbeat drumming style that provided the template, not just for rock and roll drumming, but for most of the pop music that followed. He was later headhunted to LA, where he was in demand to beat the skins for everyone from Frank Sinatra to Tom Waits, from the Beach Boys to Elvis Costello. But it was in Cosimo Matassa's little backroom studio in the late 40s and 50s that he developed the backbeat sound that was the defining element on the hits of rock and roll. The story I really like is that apparently Earl Palmer had been hired to play along on a video for the band Cracker. The band's leader, David Lowry, asked Palmer if he'd be able to play along with the songs. Palmer gave Lowry a long look and said, "Man, I invented this shit."
Yeah, the need I'm talking, but you and me, I'm hoping.